Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. So many times, we have conditions or situations that occur in our life, and we may not know the right questions to ask. We may be totally in the dark about options that we can work with. Well, for all of you, you're very much aware of the big controversy that has been going on just in the last few days regarding veterans, those men and women that have made a commitment to serve the United States to the best of their capacity. And it is really becoming almost a very disruptive situation, especially when it comes to the positioning of people making decisions. But what we're going to be talking about today, which is, believe it or not, very much linked in to part of what is going on, is we're going to be talking to a woman, Mary Markovich. Now, she has been very, very much involved for a very long period of time in working with veterans. And she's put out a publication, which is extremely important, What a Surviving Spouse Should Know About Veterans Benefits. I think the timing of her being on our show today is absolutely fascinating, especially with all of what we're hearing in the news. So I want to welcome to the show, Mary Markovich. Mary, thank you for being with us today.
Well, for inviting me.
All right. Now, I know that your phone just gurgled a little bit there, and I know you're on a cell phone, so please try not to move too much as we're talking so that we don't lose the signal. Mary,
All right. It
is a very, almost an emotional thing for me when I'm listening to all of this rhetoric that is on the news and having members of my family, my husband's family, I have neighbors here in the Pacific Northwest who have members of their family that have served in the Korean War, the Vietnam War. I mean, this is something that so many of us have a familiarity with. And the treatment of our veterans and the frustration that so many of them go through and trying to get the help they need is really agitating. And I know that when one loses a family member, especially a spouse, it is very, very difficult. Before we get into discussing some of those topics, I would like to know how it is that you yourself chose to go into this arena, which really is fraught with all kinds of confusion. Why is it that you felt that this was something important for you to do and that you wanted to make a commitment to working with veterans and the surviving spouses?
Well, I interned with an elder law attorney in law school, and I was very interested in his work. That's when elder law just was beginning, and they didn't even have a label for elder law in the yellow pages.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided in law school that that's exactly what I wanted to do. And so since 1994, I have been an elder law attorney, helping individuals who have retired or they're planning for retirement and helping them stretch their retirement dollars, particularly as the cost of long-term care is escalating. Then it came to my attention several years ago that the VA had a benefit that could be used in conjunction with Medicaid if someone needed it, or just stand alone to help individuals pay for long-term care. So that's how I got started with that, pension, and then I discovered that sometimes someone gets a rating, a veteran gets a rating of maybe 10% for a disability and just continues on with that rating for years, and he or she could qualify for a much greater monetary benefit if there was an increase in rating. And so that's how I got into the compensation side. So I regularly represent veterans and surviving spouses with both pension applications and compensation.
There are many in the military who have retired, and I'm thinking of a friend of mine who is married to a man who served in the Korean War. He's in his 80s now, and he is beginning to suffer with dementia, and there are other physical conditions, Parkinson's, et cetera, that have evolved. Now, this is something that when she found out about it, because of their financial level, it was very critical that she be able to look at her husband's care. And in no way was she able to look at even being close to being able to provide something for her husband as he was getting older. She physically isn't strong enough to pick him up and to assist him, and she's pretty much tried to do everything on her own. And she went to the VA, and maybe I need to be corrected on this, but in her situation, she had to almost be financially in a destitute positioning before they would even consider her. And a member of my family, I know after I heard her story, and this was a few months back, I went to the VA myself to assist a family member. We were making an inquiry about possible benefits they would have. And it just made me aware of something that is so big, so big. I was sitting in a waiting room, and as it turned out, the member of my family, they had too much of an income. There was nothing they could do. But I looked at so many of the people that were in that waiting room, and my heart went out to them. I saw some with small children. Some of them were young. They had been disabled severely. I saw all ages. And I wondered, who is going to really hear their stories? How can this be managed? You see something on television about the volumes of material. It may be a year. It might be 10 years before they get to this stuff. They'll say, well, it's because it's not in the computer. That's not, that doesn't compute, using a pun that really I'm just, it was very upsetting to me. When I looked at this, I thought, how in the world do you manage this? How can this begin? Where does someone start? Because your book, right here, What Every Surviving Spouse Should Know About Veterans Benefits. What are those benefits?
Well, to begin with, for a surviving spouse, there are, and there's been a lot of talk about the death gratuity, which is $100,000 when a service member is deceased in the service of his country or her country. There are accrued benefits, and that's something that is owed to the veteran, and he or she is in the process of applying, and there just hasn't been a decision made, or there's a check in the mail, and that's accrued. It's owed to the veteran, but it hasn't been paid to the veteran, and the surviving spouse could get that benefit. Also, recently, there's substitution. And that is, if the veteran has applied and is in the process of appealing the case and then dies, the surviving spouse can step into the shoes of the veteran and continue with the appeals. There are, it's called in VA language, DIC benefits, but the full name is Dependency and Indemnity Compensation Benefits. And that is when a veteran dies from a service-connected condition. Also, there's death pension, and that is when a veteran dies from a non-service connected condition. So there's a lot of twists and turns in this, and some of the things you were saying about younger veterans being disabled, they can also, the veteran himself or herself can get pension, even though they are not at an age, they're under 65 years of age. Mm-hmm. They can still qualify for pension if they are permanently and totally disabled. And if the Social Security Administration determines that the individual is permanently and totally disabled, then the VA has to accept that. But if the Social Security Administration has not determined that, then the VA has a process where they examine the veteran and, you know, go through a lengthy process. But anyone who is 65 or older who has served in active duty for at least 90 days, and one of those days was when the United States was in war, and I didn't say declared war because somehow the wars aren't declared anymore, but they're during wartime, and had anything other than a dishonorable discharge, then that veteran is eligible for VA pension.
One of the things that you state right in the very beginning of your book, and I'm quoting it directly, VA laws, regulations, and the interpretation of those laws and regulations change frequently, sometimes daily. That has to be a nightmare. That's just as bad as the IRS. So,
that's true, but that's what happens when you have court cases that attorneys can convince the VA that what they've done before is not applicable in this particular claim case, or the law has been interpreted the wrong way, or, you know, all these kinds of things. And so regularly, daily, attorneys are arguing veterans' cases in court, and the law changes, can be changed daily. But I gave in the book some sources, some online free sources, where people who want to know how to research VA law and how it applies to them, then go online and find the latest cases updated daily.
Now, you have a quote in here, "To care for him who shall have borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan." This is the motto of the VA, which was stated by President Abraham Lincoln, and this was stated during his second inaugural address. You say the VA benefits claims process is a two-pronged process. How so?
Absolutely. And I have had veterans, surviving spouses come to me, and they have been appealing for years and understand the two-pronged process. First, the veteran has to be eligible for the benefits. And by that, I mean, let's give that pension as an example. Be 65 or over, served or permanently and totally disabled, have served at least 90 days, and all those other things I talked. Now, if the veteran himself or herself does not satisfy all those eligibility requirements, let's say I have some individuals who served 90 days, had an honorable discharge, everything was correct, but they didn't serve during a time the United States was at war. So they do not qualify for pension. Doesn't matter. And then the surviving spouse comes to me and says, well, we were married 30 years. He was a veteran, so why can't I get pension? And that's why, because the veteran's not eligible, even though potentially if he had served at a different time, then potentially then the surviving spouse could have been entitled to benefits. So first, eligibility and entitlement. Let's say the sitting spouse had divorced her husband. She not be entitled. Even though he was eligible, she didn't satisfy the entitlement. So both of those prongs have to be satisfied or else the individual cannot get veterans benefits.
Something and, that I think is very, very important that you bring out, and this there's a case that you have that talking about the daughter of a veteran, and that the father, he's not receiving any kinds of benefits from the VA, and he's not eligible to apply. Well, the daughter goes in, she wants to get benefits because someone had advised her that this would be possible. And you made a statement to her. She sought you out, and you said the VA's monetary benefit is for the benefit of the veteran and is paid directly to the veteran if he or she is eligible.
If the veteran is alive. If the veteran is alive. And that's what this daughter did not realize, the eligibility requirements. The veteran was not eligible to be to receive any kind of benefits. He didn't have the correct type of discharge, and he wasn't receiving any money. But she thought that because her mother was in the hospital and married for a long, many years to a veteran, that mom should receive some kind of benefit to help pay for her hospital bill. And at the local hospital, someone who called themselves Veterans Consultant advised her, sure, go ahead and apply. Well, then came to me, and I said, you know, there's just no way that mom would be eligible for anything because your father is not eligible, so your mother would not be entitled.
Mm-hmm. And
so both of the problems have to be satisfied.
Now, you go into detail on if someone wants to get assistance, if they need assistance, which in today's world, especially when you're dealing with government agencies, actually in so many different levels, you really do need to have a legal representative. You've been trained in this. This is a part of your work. This is what you do. And that's one of the reasons why you've written the book, because you want it as an educational resource for people to be able to use. And this is titled, What Every Surviving Spouse Should Know About Veterans Benefit. And it's a good book for someone that wants to be an advocate for veterans. It informs, and this is very important. And you are very, very thorough when you say those people that are representing the veteran, there are qualifications that they must have. And one of the things which I found was interesting is that they're not supposed to charge. There's
no
fees for this service. And I bet you anybody listening to this that maybe is going through a process and somebody's charging them $1,000 a month or whatever, they're going to go, what? There's not supposed to be a fee? Let's talk about who they should seek out, what the qualifications should be, and a website that they can go to if they need to have a resource.
Okay, let me look up that website. I don't have it right in front of me, but maybe you do. Well,
yes, I do. I have it right
in front of me. There is a process, and if you'd like to give that website,
yes,
that's
I'll
fine.
Give that while you're checking on something else. It's www.va.gov/OGC/app/accreditation/index.asp. And I'll repeat that later on. But you want to make sure whoever you get as an advisor is accredited with the Veterans Association. You don't want to get stuck with someone that is going to be unethical, and you are just going to absolutely be going out of your mind trying to figure stuff out. You don't want to go there. So let's talk about the fees for services, because you've got very specific information regarding that.
Well, it's a federal law that no one can charge a fee helping the claimant, and that's the person who's applying for VA benefits, and that is just a federal law. So if it, someone is being charged a fee, they need to notify the VA because there are civil and criminal penalties for someone doing that. Attorneys and non-attorneys can be accredited by the VA. Attorneys need to just file an application with the VA, and the VA checks out their application, makes sure they're in good standing with the state bar, and then they become accredited. Non-attorneys go through a process of the same thing as submitting the application and then taking a test, and making sure that they are familiar with VA law. But both attorneys and non-attorneys, within 12 months of accreditation, have to take, it's called a continuing legal education course, and it covers various aspects of VA law and the VA mandates, what those areas are, and also every other year thereafter, they still have to take, both attorneys and attorneys have to take continuing legal education courses. So you can be sure that someone who is accredited is, you know, researching law and staying updated on the law and that sort of thing. The problem is there are unscrupulous business persons who target either surviving spouses or veterans, and they are not accredited. And probably the worst information they give is to, trying to help them qualify for pension, and then later if they need a higher level of care, then they do not qualify for Medicaid because of different transfers they've made. So, you know, it's a shame, but it can't be undone once it's done. So that's why it's best to rely on someone who's accredited. Now, people who work for the Veterans of Foreign War, the American Legion, those kinds of veteran service organizations, they go through a training process, too. And they still don't charge the veteran or family member a fee. They are, you know, compensated by federal grants and things like that. So, so ever a veteran or a surviving spouse goes in to for help the application, no one can charge a fee, whether they're accredited or not. So if they are, then they need to inform the VA who it is that's charging a fee, and the VA will investigate.
Which is appropriate. Because of all of this furor that's going on right now in the media and with what has been going on with those 20 individuals that passed away within a very short period of time, and all of the challenges that have been put upon the family. There's this that is really coming to the forefront. And as I said, I know that there are thousands of families that have claims in. And is there a time limit on putting in for a claim? And if someone has passed, let's say there's a veteran that dies, and then the family member, the surviving spouse, wants to make a claim for benefit. Is that possible? Is there a time limit on it? What do they have to look at?
Well, actually, there's no time limit if the veteran has died from a service-connect death. But if the surviving spouse wants the benefits to be retroactive to the date of the veteran's death, then he or she has to apply within 1 year. But another problem is there is a million case backlog of claims.
And so someone should expect claims. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Isn't that terrible?
It's awful. So, 1 million cases of veterans. That is not going to be... Oh, that's appalling.
Well, one of the biggest problems that I have seen is people try to file their own applications, and it's, although it's the term application, it's not like a job application. There are specific rules that have to be followed, and signatures in a certain place, and dates in place, and things like that. And so when someone does that incorrectly, then it has to churn through the VA process, and then they send the claim back a letter saying you didn't do this or do that, and you know that all of that takes a great deal of time. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the problems. But I can understand people want to, you know, take charge of their own life and be empowered and fill out these things on their own. And that's why in the book I gave information about all the different forms that have to be filled out. And they're all available at charge at va.gov. Or who it is, when they get to the point of appealing their case and it has to be argued before the U.S. Court of Appeals, Veterans Claims, and there has to perhaps be an oral argument, things like that. Nobody wants to write their own brief and do an oral argument. So everybody gets to a point where they seek out an attorney. It's just at what point do you want to seek out an attorney? Mm-hmm. Now, Veterans Service Stations will go through the appeals process up to and including the Veterans Appeals. But once the case goes farther than that, everybody, they just refer it to an attorney, the case to an attorney.
You have information about marriage and on certain protocols that if a spouse, and I know we're almost out of time here, but I'm saying this for my audience, information about a spouse, your significant other, dies, they're veteran, certain things will apply if you remarry, where you might not be able to continue to get benefits, other benefits, you may continue for as long as you live. There's all kinds of points of information that are in this book. And if you know of anyone who is dealing with a spouse that potentially may end up having challenges, or you've had a member of the family that has passed away in service to their country, you need to know about benefits. This is very important. In this book, What Every Surviving Spouse Should Know About Veterans Benefits, it's a step-by-step workbook. It will guide the surviving spouse, maybe an advocate that's working with you. This is important because, as she states in the book, things are changing every day. But she gives you websites. She gives you information on forms, how to fill them out. This is not something to be taken lightly, and I would sincerely encourage any of you that know of anyone that might be going through a challenge. Hopefully, they don't have to. But even if there's a remote possibility, this is information that can be served well, and you never know. You may be able to pass it along to someone else. Mary Markovich has been my guest. You can go to mmarkovich.com. That's M. for Mary, MarkovIch.com, or you can go to lawdocs.com, and that's LAWDOX.com, to find out more details about the book itself. It's really something that's very down to earth, very real. Mary has tried to make it as simple as possible for anyone that's picking it up, but she wants you to be informed. Mary Markovich, thank you so much for being my guest today, and I think this is a great service that you have given to those that will have need of this information.
Thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me.
It's been a delight, a pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Check out mmarkovich.com, also lawdocs.com. This is important information. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into if you would like to let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me about a question, anything that you like. I'll be happy to respond to that. Again, 888-627-6008. For those of you up in the far north, in the great state of Alaska, I'm going to be up there visiting. I'll be in Fairbanks and Anchorage. I will be up there as of next Tuesday, and then I will be there from the 15th to the 17th in Fairbanks and from the 18th to the 21st in Anchorage, Alaska. If you want to know the local numbers to contact me on, go ahead and check out my newsletter, which is on my website, DelphiInternational.com, and that'll work out just fabulously. And you'll know the local numbers, but if you want to call my office for information, call me at 253-582-5604, and I am going to be seeing people privately. Well, I wanted to share something with you. It's a point of information regarding nuclear power. We all know what has happened in Japan, and they're still feeling the repercussions of the 9.0 magnitude earthquake and the tsunami that literally wiped it out. And all of that nuclear radiation, well, they're still dealing with it. And they found that all of the barriers, which we're well informed about, that had been installed to prevent this kind of leakage, just totally failed. And they've got tons and tons and tons of contaminated water that went into the Pacific. And it's still happening. From something that I received in the way of information from a listener, you have this. Now, this is what they think is going to be happening. It's going to take 40 years and cost $11 billion. That's the guesstimate. It's actually costing more than that because this is going out. Mother Nature can deal with this to a point, but there's only so much that can be done within a particular period of time. Now, because of this, the Japanese, which at the time of the disaster, 30% of its electricity was being provided by nuclear power, and they were planning on building more plants. Well, the 50 reactors that they had set up in Japan are all shut down now. And this has created a challenge, but the 70% of the Japanese people said, no more. We don't want this around, period. So though there might be a little bit of this, as far as the Japanese people are concerned, they don't want anything to do with it any more than necessary. Now, what has happened because of this? Well, usually, this is when we'll have a spike of technologies developing to replace what is found that is not that efficient. Now, there may be those of you that are listening. They'll say, well, nuclear power could serve us well. It might be able to do it. But if you think about the amount of waste that they're burying in the earth in these huge, huge containers, this stuff is still lethal and still hot. It's going to be around for thousands of years. I think the only solution is when someone will know how to take that chemical stuff that is left and to de-energize it, to actually remove it back or put it back into a safe expression. I'm not a scientist, but we worked so hard on developing it, nobody ever thinks about how do you disempower it? How do you change that chemical structure so that it no longer has the negative effects? Well, they say that Japan is going to be the number two market for solar power in the world. China's picking up on it, and they are really wanting to utilize their geothermal capacities. Nuclear energy, can it be made safe? Yes, but somebody's going to have to come up with the real resolution. Not maybe, not gee, in 20 years, they're going to need to be able to come up with it because it's devastating to nature. I know from Native Americans that I have spoken with up in the far north through the years. These are people that live in villages that are like a Point Hope or in other areas of the Arctic, where there has been dumping of nuclear waste by major powers. They have just dumped it in the Arctic waters. This was dumped a long time ago, back in the 40s and 50s. It's leaking. The villagers are finding and have found for a long time, they'll pull up fish that have tumors on them. They have all kinds of experiences. Cancer has risen in their environment where it was almost, they hardly knew what it was. So there's a lot of things that we need to understand our positioning of responsibility about. And I think so many times it's very difficult to be honest about what could be a negative result. Well, I believe we're shifting. We're shifting because it's affecting us. We are seeing rise in cancers. We're seeing a rise in autism. We're seeing so many things that are growing in numbers. And people will say, oh, that's just because we have more people on the planet. Perhaps that's true. We've got 7 billion people that are going to be occupying this globe. So we need to be mindful. We need to be mindful about what we do. How is this going to affect our water? How is it going to affect the earth? What is going to be happening here? Again, I'm not a scientist. I don't think you have to be one to figure this out. And a lot of people are taking charge of their own wellness because they're saying, I have to make sure I take care of myself. This is my responsibility. Instead of just turning themselves over to an environment that isn't willing to question, find out about what they've got, look at people as individuals, not just a little box of something. Very, very important. And this is, I think, where ingenuity, creativity come in. And this is where anyone, if they have the problem-solving capacities, can say, let's see what we can come up with. I believe I can work through this. Innovation usually comes about because of necessity. If we're cozy, we're comfortable, do we really want to bother? Not necessarily. But when someone sees a challenge and says, we can address this, I think of the 18-year-old that figured out how to develop a battery that's going to last 100 times longer than the batteries we're using at this time. This is amazing. This is what we can do. And we've got a lot of good minds that are working on this right now. And I think part of the problem that we have experience is we get all excited about invention, but we don't look at what the downside can be. We don't look at what we consider the unhealthy side of something. What if we have too much of it? Is it going to benefit us? How is it going to create a negative situation? This is the human experience. And in a way, it is something that is exciting on one hand, and then on the other hand, it's discouraging. So we need to remember that we always can take whatever is in place and use that as leverage to motivate us to make this world a better place. And it has been done by a lot of people that have never gotten recognition for what they've achieved. Just like someone at one time invented the application of a safety pin, a straight pin, the lowly zipper that we all take for granted, and even Velcro. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. Now, I want to let you know who's going to be coming up. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about a collaboration economy. Eric Lowett is my guest, and what we're going to be talking about is a different way of doing business. In my observation, it's really not so different, but I think it is a wake-up call because we are needing to understand you don't stand alone. To be successful, it always takes a team, always. And it creates a ripple effect that can have a very long-standing effect. Also, what is your what? Steve Oshler is going to be my guest on Monday, and we're going to be talking about various things that you can do to recognize what your passion is. What is it that you really just, it just lights up your life every time you think about being involved in something in particular. It just makes you feel good. Well, the truth is, when you become aware of that, then you have a chance to really create the life you want. Isn't that a delightful thing to think of? That you're not some robot that's just following some methodology, that you're going to be able to go into yourself and to be able to pull up and out your strengths, recognize your weaknesses, and move with those strengths so that they can empower you to have a rich, full life? I think that's important. Linda Wojcik is going to be my guest next week. We're going to be talking about Joshua's lessons. This is a very powerful story about her son and his illnesses and how that illness ended up changing her whole family, her whole attitude about life, and it affected her as an entrepreneur. She's one of those people that's making a difference. Kicking in the wall, if you are a creative person and you've wanted to know how to overcome a writer's block or just get those creative juices flowing. Ms. Abercrombie is going to be the lady that's going to be with us, and also you are going to find out about steps that you can take for yourself. In 14 days, you can be happier and healthier. Donna Stone is going to be my guest. So we've got a great lineup of people. There will be some Best of Donna next week as well because I will be in a plane. I haven't yet figured out how I can travel in a plane and do a broadcast in the air, but one day maybe I will. But at this time, that will be coming up. So more of this is going to be posted on the website here at the station, so you'll find out about that. I know we're going to be taking a break. In fact, let's take a break now. When we come back, I am going to share with you a story about a person who's 68 years of age who's involved in a project over in Afghanistan. A great story. When we come back, I'll share that with you and some other little tidbits. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I want to let you know you give me a buzz at 888-627-6008, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. There is a gentleman. His name is Keith Blackie. He is 68 years of age, and I've got a picture of him in front of me. But I want to digress for just a minute. I heard a commentator on a particular broadcast just in the past couple of days asking a question in a panel discussion, do you think Americans are mean? And I listened to the rhetoric of one person who was saying, oh, Americans are really mean. And I listened to this discourse and I thought, I wonder who the brainchild was of asking this kind of question. Americans are the most generous people on this earth. Americans come from all walk of life, all economic levels, all kinds of necessity. And to even put a question like that out, when Americans often will give their pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters to any cause that they believe in. In recent history, it's been families that are overseas in various countries, third world countries. I've got a neighbor who goes over to Africa that works with people in Africa to try to help them overcome a lot of the things there. I know of people that work right in the local community. Nobody ever hears about these people. They're good-hearted people. Well, when I came across this article, which a woman by the name of Betty gave to me, she said, here, I want to just share this with you because I think it's important. And I said, it's important enough. And I want to thank Betty for giving me the details. But the article is titled, Why Older Americans Are Working in Afghanistan. Now, when I got this, it was written by Dennis Gray. This is what Dennis discovered about Kenneth Blackie. About 40 years ago, Blackie was a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. Today, at the age of 68, he's in a war zone. He is trying to revive the Afghan scouting program. Yes, you're hearing me correctly. A scouting program very similar to the Boy Scouts of America. He used that as the template because the scouting program was literally decimated by the horrific bloody conflicts that have gone on, and the Taliban. Taliban didn't want this about. No. Why? It's just like any other organization that doesn't want its people to think. And the understanding of integrity, of helping others, the general attitudes of any scouting program that I have ever been a part of and involved with, always exemplify the finer qualities of the human spirit and the finer actions. Now, Blackie, when he was interviewed by Dennis, said, I'm not doing anything stupid or putting myself in unnecessary danger while I'm doing my job. He said, I felt it was my fate to work in Afghanistan because of a seemingly unrelated event. And this is the story that he shared. His fighter jet was shot down during the Vietnam War, and he was captured. His wingman managed to find out where he was being held. A raid was designed and put into force, and Blackie was freed from being a prisoner. Now, in 2005, his wingman, who was a U.S. diplomat in Baghdad, called Blackie for help. He had been a scout and he knew Blackie was very supportive of the scouting environment. He said, would you please help me develop something like this? This was 2005. Help me develop something like this over here. Young boys that really need this kind of support. So Blackie said, what do you say to a man who saved your life other than yes? So he went to Iraq, and in 5 years' time, the number of scouts grew from 8. They started off with 8 young boys. Now it's 150,000 young men. He's hoping for a similar success. That was in Baghdad. He's hoping for a similar success in Afghanistan. He said, scouts are a way of developing children, and children are the future of any country. That is so true. How the minds and attitudes of a youth are developed makes all the difference in the world and the result of a culture's pattern. If you teach war and hate, that's what they're going to do. That's just the way it's going to be because they won't know anything differently. Have you ever met anybody that had an attitude, a hateful attitude, an attitude where they said, this is the way it is, it's always going to be this way, nothing can ever change? I think we can all relate to someone with that kind of a disposition. And we have a choice. We can love them for who they are, or we can say, no, I don't agree with you. I think there is an option. There is a choice. We can create change. But that is not something that's always easy to do, because that means that you may have to go up against someone or say, I want a better way. Or maybe you go out just like this gentleman did, Blackie, and say, I'm going to be a part of something bigger, something that's going to make this world a better place. And I'm going to do it with the kids. It's so important to understand that lots of times attitudes that we have or belief systems we have that have been taught to us, we need to analyze. And this is something that here in the United States, we've had to go through a lot of shifting and changing through the years. I've seen many different environments that I've been exposed to that I said, no, that is not the way I choose to think or I choose to feel. I want to make my own choices. I want to make my own determination. Doesn't mean we cannot learn from those that are around us or who have gone before us. But it does take a willingness to be able to think, to be able to really ask questions, to be unafraid of being true to what we feel is the right thing. And it can vary in our perceptions and understandings, and we all have those thoughts, those images, those perceptions that we need to examine periodically. A lot of those perceptions sometimes can create a level of fear that will literally imprison us. And that's what those that really want to have dominion over us frequently like to enforce. Because in that way, they can, well, you might say, encourage the releasing of a trigger so that they can keep you bound to whatever fears they might have. It takes courage to be a human being. It takes courage to learn how to think for yourself. It takes courage to be able to step outside of your box. I know we're closing out in just about a minute here. So I would just like to say, as I always do at the end of my show, remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Within your very essence, you have the capacity of being the scriptwriter, the producer, and the director of this experience called life. What part do you want to play in that? Are you going to buy into somebody else's script, or are you going to write your own? It takes courage to be an individual. It takes courage to recognize the connection in life that you have with everything that's around you and understand that you are quite significant. And I'm so delighted that you were able to join me today. Won't you come again to my broadcast table tomorrow? Same time, same place. Have that cup of coffee or tea handy, and give a listen to my guests. They always have something to share. This is Donna Sebo. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.